Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ben, and hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone, indeed. Don't make me laugh again, John,
sorry.
I'm trying to do my intro. Terrible, terrible person. Yes, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. Lots to get through, as usual. And don't forget, of course, you can also catch us on the internet at dublincityfm.ie or as a podcast on Mixcloud and probably other places as well. Well, Mr. Dixon, tell us.
Yes.
What's to be seen in the sky these evenings?
We are looking forward in the next week or so to seeing the International Space Station back in our evening skies again. Just mark this for your diaries, March 11th until March the 28th. And we will give you the times as we get them. Now, there are probably a few morning passes as well, because it's still not particularly great, although it's getting brighter earlier, and much, much brighter earlier. So there's a great stretch in the mornings and a great stretch in the evenings. And a lot of people think there's a planet parade out there at the moment. And, okay.
Yeah, somebody asked me about it.
Yeah, well, there always is. And I know people have been out just looking for these and said they could only see two. Well, you can only see Saturn and Jupiter, Venus and Jupiter really well. If you've got a pair of binoculars, you can see Saturn, and Mercury is fading day by day now into the twilight again. Uranus and Neptune. But we go through them first. Mercury now fading rapidly in the bright western twilight. It's dropping lower fast too. It makes it a real challenge. And few people, including me, have never seen Mercury. Now, whether Ben has seen it, all right.
Yes, yep. I have.
Venus, it's a bright one, minus 3.9. It's much easier low in the western twilight. So they're all in the west really at the moment. It shines a trace higher after sunset each day. So it's still setting about half an hour before twilight ends. Saturn is plus 0.1. This is one of the difficult ones to see. And it's only 2 degrees to the upper left of Venus if you want to go out mooching around for it. Mars, unfortunately, it's the only one we can't see at the moment. It remains out of sight deep in the glare of sunrise. Jupiter, minus 2.4, still a fine sight. It's up on in the skies all night, making it the brightest point in the night sky. It moves lower towards the southwest later in the evening and sets around 3 to 4 a.m. depending on your location. So through a telescope this week, Jupiter is still 43 or 42 arc seconds. An arc second is fist at arm length, is that right?
No, you're thinking of degrees. Well, 1 degree is divided into 60 arc minutes, and one arc minute is divided into 60 arc seconds.
Yeah, so it's
a tiny disc.
Yeah, tiny. Yeah, that's it. Uranus, plus 5.8. It's in Taurus at the moment. And it's around 5 degrees southwest of the Pleiades cluster. And it's high in the southwestern sky these evenings. And through a high power in the telescope, it's a tiny but non-stellar dot. So it's very, very difficult to see. And you will, if you want to find it, need a detailed finder chart to identify it among similar-looking faint stars so you don't mix them up. Neptune, plus 0.8, very, very dim, and 1 degree from Saturn. So they are sort of in the same vicinity, but extremely hard to see, and it's lost in the twilight through the thick, low atmosphere. So it's not really a parade, I suppose, here, isn't it, Ben?
Well, there's a few of them up, but it's not as simple as looking up and seeing five or six bright objects close together or in a line.
Yeah, so I've been asked about it as well as during the week, in fact. And I know people who've been on the beach, namely Gordon. He was on the beach in Scotland, and he got to see two, and he would have seen Venus and Jupiter. as well. So the others are there.
But they would be the easier ones.
Yeah, he had his telescope with him, all right. But it just didn't really get to see them in great detail at all. So, yep, so there we go. So watch out for the International Space Station next week, March 11th. Where are we now? We're in the third, so another week or so, and it's back in for almost a month, so 3 weeks, so it'll be good fun to watch that again.
Thank you, John. Of course, we also have the Sun and the Moon, and the Moon, we have a 99.9% waning gibbous moon, practically 100%. It was full earlier today, well, at 11:37 a.m. precisely this morning, and it was eclipsed by the Earth. It was mm-hmm. a total lunar eclipse of the moon earlier today, but
not here.
No, if you were in the middle of the Pacific or New Zealand or the very west, I think maybe Alaska or the very west eastern side of China or the western side of Brazil or the South America. But anyway, not here. It's not in view at the moment, It is on view at the moment, I should say, because the sun has set and it is a full moon, and it will be due south and at its highest at 1 a.m. tomorrow morning, when it'll be just slightly smaller, but not, you wouldn't notice the difference. It'll be down to 99.6%. You wouldn't notice the difference between 99.6% and 99.9%, or even 99.3%, which is the phase when it sets tomorrow just after 7:15 in the morning, and when it rises again at around about 7:45, depending on your location, tomorrow evening, it'll be 98% waning gibbous moon. But again, you won't notice the difference between the naked eye anyway.
I was up
between a 98% and a full moon.
Early-ish this morning, 4:00-ish, and was watching. It's extremely bright, fantastic to see. But I did notice it sort of got a bit yellowier. That's a word.
That's a word, is it? Yellowier.
It went down.
Yellowier.
And then started to disappear just as the light was appearing. But it was a fantastic sight. I always like to see that. But my favourite, of course, is the little thumbnail to see on the new moon of the...
The tiny crescent.
Yep, indeed. Mm. Yep.
Yes, so we're heading towards, as I mentioned earlier, just a full moon earlier today. And the third quarter moon will be on Wednesday, the 11th of March. In the early morning, or just about 9:30 to be precise. Now, the sun rises tomorrow in Dublin. That's Wednesday, the 4th of March, at 7:05 a.m., which is 16 minutes earlier than a week ago. And the local solar noon in Dublin, that's when the sun is at its highest and due south, that's at 12:36 in the afternoon, which is 2 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then the sun sets at 6:08 p.m., 13 minutes later than a week ago, and then we have various degrees of twilight until astronomical twilight ends and nighttime officially begins at 8:04 tomorrow evening. So that means we'll have 29 minutes more daylight than a week ago, and tomorrow another 4:12 more between sunrise and sunset, when there will be 11:03 between sunrise and sunset. And of course, later in the month, we'll have, I think, the equinox is on the 20th, if I'm not mistaken. And then about a week after that, we'll be putting the clocks forward an hour.
What date is that?
I'll check it up now. Yeah, I haven't
even thought about it, to be honest. Mm. But it's suddenly going to appear, and then we're going to get an extra hour daylight in the evening time, which is...
Of course, we lose it in the morning.
But that's not too bad. Yeah,
not too bad at all.
Now, the astronaut who required the evacuation for the International Space Station going back a number of weeks now is doing very well, they say. And we didn't know who it was really up to recently.
Yes, we now know who it is.
Yeah, we now know who it is, but we don't know what was wrong with him.
Yes.
Well, it was him anyway. It was Mike Finke. He's 58. He's doing very well and continuing to the standard post-flight reconditioning, which they do when they always come back. And he's at the NASA Center in Houston. And NASA had previously declined to identify which astronaut experienced the medical event. They kept it very quiet. Certainly somebody knew. So they signed these things that you can't say anything about anything, really. So the health issue itself was prompted by NASA to cut short the mission of the quartet, including American Sphinky, Zina Cardman, along with Russian cosmonaut Oleg Platonov and Japanese astronaut Kimiya Yui. And it was on January the 7th, he had a health mishap which required effectively immediate attention from his incredible crewmates. So whatever they did up there, they had a quick response, and they seemingly was a bit of surgery involved, but we just don't know exactly what it was, no doubt.
Well, I think more than the NASA surgeons or doctors. Yeah. We don't know. Mm. They kind of give us clues there about that it was sudden and he needed immediate attention. But that, and between his crewmates and being guided by NASA doctors and surgeons, they stabilized his condition. But I mean, you can read, I don't know what we can read into that. But then they're also saying that when they, although they cut the mission short, it wasn't an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
But because we did know about a week or two after that he had the mishap was, that they brought them all back and they're saying, well, it wasn't an emergency, everything was fine, but the better, of course, equipment and scanning equipment, and they didn't mention MRIs, but basically you have obviously better diagnostic and other facilities, hospital facilities here on planet Earth than you have up in the ISS.
Yeah, and Finke did close by saying that spaceflight is an incredible privilege, and sometimes it reminds us just how human we are, and he's dead right with that one. So we wish him very well as well, and no doubt he might ring us and tell us what's up.
It was about a week, the event happened on January the 7th, and then they splashed down, cut their mission short, and splashed down off the California coast on January the 15th. So they were kind of a little anxious to get back early, but not an emergency as such. Now, John, I think the big news
this week is
Artemis, the return to the moon. Now, we've been banging on here for so long about Artemis 3 will be the return to the moon. We had the Artemis 1 mission a couple of years ago that was unmanned, just checking out the spacecraft and certain functions. And Artemis 2, which we've mentioned a lot over the past couple of weeks, which was due to... They thought it might go as early as February, although people I spoke to said, not really. They didn't think that was really a goer. But they're still on target, I think, for March. But, that's Artemis 2, which was a manned mission for people going to the moon, not landing on the moon, but going to the moon and a little bit beyond, well, a bit further beyond than anyone else has ever gone before. And then Artemis 3 was supposed to be the landing, but now they're saying... Mm-hmm. No, we're going to do Artemis 4 as the landing. We want to do a few more things with Artemis 3 that it's a bit too risky. There are too many firsts to be done with it. And Artemis 3 will just stay, apparently, in Earth orbit and check out a number of things. They also, the top man there in NASA, Jared Isaacman, he wants to bring the missions closer together. He was just saying back in the days of Mercury and Gemini and Apollo, when there was generally through that time period and up to the shuttle, the missions were about 3 months apart. So he was talking about muscle memories. When you're doing something so often and things crop up and you're training and as I mentioned, things crop up and you know what to do and things like that. But if missions are 3 years apart, first of all, you're going to lose good people, presumably, and there's the training, just familiarity, I suppose. So,
with a bit of luck now, there will be a launch sooner rather than later. As you said, Artemis 3, which was meant to send astronauts to the moon surface, will now have a different test goal of rendezvous in low Earth orbit. So there's a bit of a change there. And the next phase, of course, Artemis 4, it's going for a lunar landing in 2028. It seems to just stretch and stretch.
They haven't pushed that out, though. Hmm. But they they need to start building these crafts a bit quicker and testing them a bit quicker. And then he also said that he hopes to have the Artemis 5 not too long after Artemis 4, that maybe there might be a second moon landing in 2028. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. As we mentioned, of course, the Artemis 2, they had to roll it back into the vehicle assembly building because they had a leak of liquid.
So great photographs. Great photographs on the internet of it being rolled back in the cover of darkness, I suppose. And it takes a long time for it to get back, 1 mile per hour, and it's how long, far away
about
from
it? 4 miles, I
guess. Yeah. Is that the same caterpillary thing that they use for the Apollo missions?
The same crawler?
Yeah, the crawler thing.
Yeah.
Isn't it incredible? Yeah. It's like a great big tank.
The shuttle and the Apollo.
Yep, there you go.
They all had to go and, big crawler.
Yeah, funny, we were talking to one of our bosses during the week last week, and he's into the Artemis thing. He was asking us questions about that, and one of his son, I think, is into space as well. So it's great to know that people are sort of watching and listening, because he said he was at Chris Hadfield when he was here last year.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is one of the radio station, Dublin City FM.
Yeah.
Somebody on the board here. Very much into it.
There you go. And we were talking to them, and he was saying that, well, it's nice to see people have an interest as what we do. Yep.
As what we do.
As what we do, indeed.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast.
Now, March the 2nd, in 2004, the Rosetta spacecraft launched to Comet P67. I remember that extremely well. This was one from the European Space Agency, and it was, March 2nd, 2004, and to study Comet 67, which is a really funny name.
Oh, Cherish.
Something like Cherish that, yeah.
Cherry Jerry, we call it for, that makes things simple.
Yeah, they seem to drop these Cherish names Menko, after a while. Yep.
Cherim,
And it was launched on an Ariane 5 rocket from French Guiana and spent the next decade chasing after Comet 67P. And when it did arrive in 2014, Rosetta dropped a small lander called Philae onto the comet. I remember this like yesterday. And it had, of course, it had a rough landing and went missing as it went tumbling across the comet. So wasn't great news for that one either. So there's something just to remember. In March the 2nd, 2004, and it took 10 years to get there. And it failed just a little bit.
Yeah, it didn't land quite right. And just a short item now on Uranus, the planet way, way, way out there. And somebody's been looking at it through using the James Webb Space Telescope, and they have discovered, and they have mapped actually, a three-dimensional view of the upper atmosphere of Uranus, and it shows how the planet's rather unusual magnetic field creates and sculpts bright auroras like we have here, except these ones are thousands of kilometers above its clouds. And they said the new observations deliver the most detailed picture so far of where auroras form at Uranus and how energy is transported vertically through its upper atmosphere and ionosphere. And they also confirmed that the upper atmosphere is continuing to cool over the past three decades. I thought it'd be cool enough all the way out there. It wouldn't have to cool it any further. But I was actually surprised because they found that the temperature in the upper atmosphere peaks between roughly about 3,000 and 4,000 kilometers above the cloud tops. And they say that's where the ion densities are reached their maximum, at up to about 1,000 kilometers. And they say when they see the Uranus upper atmosphere in three dimensions, they can trace how the energy moves upward through the planet's atmosphere and even see the influence of its lopsided magnetic field. This is the other bit that I thought was interesting. You don't hear on Earth where the is it the geographical North Pole? Of course, is that right at the top of the planet? And the magnetic North Pole is not too far from true north, but on Uranus it's offset by something like 60 degrees. So instead of these aurora, which would form, well, here on Earth they form around the poles, the North and South Pole, but the North and South magnetic poles, which are very close to the North and South geographical poles, if that's the word, or terrestrial poles, they on Uranus they'd be 60 degrees off that. So basically you could see them anywhere on the planet, well, depending on where you are, but it's the aurora are not just confined to the geographic North Poles, like is why here we have to go to, well, not we have to go to, but the further north, the further to the North Pole you go, the greater your chances of seeing aurora. But that's not the case on Uranus.
Yeah, just it's a most unusual planet. I suppose they're really only starting to learn what's going on up there, although they've been doing it for years at this stage. Now, astronomers just watched a star 1,540 times the size of our own sun transform into a hypergiant. The question is, will it go supernova? And the future evolution of WOHG64 remains uncertain. Astronomers have witnessed this biggest, one of the biggest stars in the universe, transforming into the rare stellar body, and dramatic metamorphosis may be the prequel to a powerful supernova. Now that, if it's 1,500 times the size of our sun, that would be a supernova. It's a doomed star. The one that's in question, just mentioned the name, WOHG64. Has a lot of big, long, fancy name as well, and you'd never remember that number. It's located in the satellite galaxy of the Milky Way, known as Large Magellanic Cloud, and the LMC in our language. And it's about 163,000 light years away. The star is around 1,540 times the size of the sun, with almost 30 times the mass of our star, and a staggering 282,000 times its brightness. Discovered in the 1970s, it's always appeared to be a red supergiant star surrounded by a ring of really thick, dense dust as well. So this is one I haven't heard of before, but they're evidently keeping an eye on it just to see if it's going to disappear. Betelgeuse is the one that I'm really waiting for.
Yeah, you look up every night, see if it's still
one,
there.
Yeah. That's the one in Orion. They say if it goes top supernova, left, which it might have done, probably won't see it, but if we do, it would light up the whole area of the Orion, area of the sky, so, and then that would sort of fix us for watching stars for the rest of our life.
Don't hold your breath waiting
for
Betelgeuse to go bang.
Yeah, that's a big monster. It's about 20 times the size of our sun, so this one is a big, big monster.
Thank you, John. Now, the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, in the news most days now for all the wrong reasons, but they do have their own space program, and sometime last month they announced that it would extend its Mars probe mission. They have actually their own Mars mission, which is now in its fifth year, and they're going to extend it for another 3 years. And the probe is called Hope. It did arrive in orbit around Mars back in 2021 after a 7-month voyage. And that made it the first Arab country, the UAE, that is, to explore the red planet. And that investment so far has cost them $200 million. Not a lot. When you consider what we spent on the hospital here and other things. But anyway, that's another. They called it the Emirates Mars Mission, or the EMM. It was initially planned to collect 1 terabit of data about the Martian atmosphere. So far it's collected 10 terabits, and as I mentioned, it will be extended until 2028. And the UAE, they say, is now hoping to be one of the 10 biggest players in the space economy by the year 2021. And the space agency was founded, or at least they say, in the first 10 years, they were just basically setting it up. predominantly government funded, but right now they're having a look at the commercial side of the things as well. And their next mission, they say, is going to be to the asteroid belt, and it'll be half funded by the private sector. And this Mars mission also helped gather some of that precise observations of the small Martian moon Deimos. And if you remember the comet 3I Atlas, which was, of course, the third interstellar object to be detected from Earth, which some people who should have known better suggested it was an alien spaceship. We won't go back into that one. So that's a $1 billion mission to the asteroid belt. It's scheduled for 2028, and they also aim to launch an unmanned spacecraft that will travel 5 billion kilometers or 3.1 billion miles to explore the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter.
Yeah, we're not going to have another lunar eclipse after today until the 7th of September, but luckily enough, it's going to be a 93% partial lunar eclipse in some areas of the world, including Australia, Asia, Africa, and Europe. As seen from Ireland and the UK, the moon rises fully eclipsed and rapidly moves out of the Earth's shadow. It's quite an amazing thing to see. It's just the moon gets in the way of us, between us and the sun. And it's just the particular size and distance away, and it's just sort of, you've seen these. And we've seen them as well. It's just, it gets darker. I haven't been lucky enough to see a complete one, but we've seen it certainly getting darker as well. But we've 7th of September, put that in your diary. We have meteor showers coming up now this year again. We had the Quadrantids in the 3rd to the 4th of January. And there won't be another one until the Lyrids come around 22nd and 23rd of April. And you'll always get to see a few just before and after as well. The Eta Aquarids are the 9th of May in the morning peaking. Again, you'll get to see some the week coming up and the week just after. The Perseids, well, there we go, 12th and 13th of August. These are my favourite ones, and you can almost, if it's a moonless sky, if you like, you can probably get to see 120 meteors per hour, and I have seen loads of these fellas, so keep those in your diary. You get to see them about a fortnight before and a fortnight afterwards. Orionids on the 21st to 22nd of October, the Leonids from the 17th to the 18th of November, and the Geminids the 13th and 14th and 14th and 15th of December. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we have 6 different meteor showers heading our way this year, as they always do, but we will let you know as they come closer as to where to watch them and how to watch them, etc. as well. And just before we disappear off, comets.
Just before you get to that, don't forget the old random meteors that...
I love seeing... Oh, these are brilliant. Yeah. That
just come out of... Well, I wouldn't say come out of nowhere, but, part of a meteor shower.
Yeah, you can see them at any time. Be lucky as well. You get these big flares as well, iridium flares and things like that, just bombing through the sky as well. So if you're lucky, you got to keep looking up. That's the big question. And just before we go, comets, these are dirty snowballs from the outer solar system. If they fall towards the sun, of course, the heat evaporates their ices to produce a gaseous head, which is known as a coma, and sometimes dramatic tails. Although some comets are visible to the naked eye, which we have seen. Halley's Comet.
I didn't see Halley. Well, the last passing of Halley's Comet was in 86, and it wasn't a particularly good one.
It wasn't, no, but it was still, and there are hundreds of comets that move.
And Ryukyutaki was just before Hale-Bopp.
I saw that one.
You can see that quite easily enough, wasn't it? But there was nothing to be. Hale-Bopp was just
Anyway, we've amazing. No bright comets expected in 2026 by the time that this particular book that somebody very kindly gave me earlier on in the year, and like you, Ben, I love to see these flares. They seem like they're just going to fall in the garden next door to you. It's amazing.
They do seem very good. I've seen a few as well, and I thought, oh my God, that's after landing in the field across the way, 300 metres away. But
out for the shovel,
it landed in Scotland. Okay, thank you very much, John. for your news items. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, and from John, of course, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. 103.2 Dublin City FM. Music all the way now. Up next, we have Dublin's Greatest Hits. And from 10 p.m. till midnight, Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m., Dave Barry, after our show, has a mix of jazz, blues and soul. And he's on until 2 a.m. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week, when we will be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.